Waiting, waiting. I shrink back. I barely recognize this Zed. I want the old one back. The Zed that I trust and care for isn't here. I know that. I know that's what we do, but I thought that I made myself clear about
hanging all over me doesn't exactly send that message.
His voice is flat, cold, and a set of chills run down my spine at the difference in him that has appeared in the last 2 minutes. I'm offended and confused by his accusation. I wasn't hanging all over you. He couldn't possibly believe that. You put your arm around me to comfort me at my father's funeral. I thought it was a lovely gesture. I didn't mean for you to take it any other way. I certainly didn't. Hardin was there. You couldn't have possibly thought that I would be affectionate with you in front of him. The echo of a cabinet closing sounds through the small house, and I'm infinitely relieved when Zed makes an effort to lower his voice.
Why not? You've used me to make him jealous before,
he whispers harshly. I want to defend myself, but I know he's right. Not about everything, but his point is valid here. I know I have in the past, and I'm sorry for that. I really am. I've told you how sorry I was before, and I'll say it again. You have always been there for me, and I appreciate you so much. But I thought we talked about this. I thought you understood that you and I could only have a friendship, if that. He waves his hands through the air.
You're so whipped by him that you don't even see just how in deep you are.
The warm glow of his eyes has dropped in temperature, settling at a chilled amber. Zed, I sigh in defeat. I didn't want to fight with him, not after the week I've had. I'm sorry, okay? I really am, but you are behaving completely inappropriately right now. I thought we were friends.
We aren't,
he spits.
I thought you just needed more time. I thought this would be my shot at finally having you, and you threw me away. Again.
I can't give you what you want. You know I can't. It's impossible for me. Right or wrong, Hardin has left his mark on me, and I wouldn't be able to give myself to you. To anyone, I fear. The moment the words leave my mouth, I regret them. The look in Zed's eyes when I'm finished with my pathetic speech has me reeling, grasping for any hint of the harmless but hopeful Mr. Collins I thought I knew. Instead, I'm standing in this bedroom, staring at the pushy and fake Wickham, who pretended to be charming and loyal to gain affections, hurt by Darcy in the past, when he was really a liar. I make my move for the door. How could I have been so foolish? Elizabeth would grab me by the shoulders and shake sense into me. I spent so much time defending Zed against Hardin, making his worries about Zed out to be a dramatic rambling out of jealousy, when Hardin was right the entire time.
Tessa, wait. I'm sorry,
he calls behind me, but I'm already opening the front door and rushing out into the rain by the time his voice travels down the hallway, drawing my mother's attention. But I'm gone. Gone. Already gone into the night. Chapter 37. Tessa. My bare feet splash along the concrete and my clothes are soaked by the time I make it to the porter's house. I don't know the time. I couldn't even guess the hour, but I'm grateful that the lights in the foyer are on. Relief washes over me like the cool rain when Noah's mother answers my knocking at the door. Tessa? My dear! Are you okay? She rushes me inside and I cringe at the sound of the water rolling off me and onto their clean hardwood flooring. I'm sorry, I just... As I stare around the expansive and practically spotless living room, I instantly regret coming here. Hardin wouldn't want to see me anyway. What was I thinking? He isn't mine to rush to anymore. He isn't the man I thought he was. My Hardin disappeared in England, that place of all my fairy tales, and a stranger took his place and ruined us. My Hardin would never get high and touch another woman, let another woman wear his clothes. My Hardin wouldn't mock me in front of his friends and send me packing back to America, tossing me away like I was nothing. I am nothing. To him, anyway. The more offenses that I list, the more foolish I sound inside my own mind. The truth of the matter is, the only Hardin I knew has done all of the above, over and over again. And even now, when I'm the only one in on the conversation, I'm still defending him. How pathetic am I? I'm so sorry, Mrs. Porter. I shouldn't have come here. I'm sorry. I frantically apologize. Please don't tell anyone I was here. And like the unstable person I've become, I rush back into the rain before she can stop me. By the time I stop running, I'm near the post office. I always hated this corner as a child. The small brick post office rests alone in the very back of the town. Not a single other house or business is near, and at times like this, when it's dark and raining, my eyes play tricks on me, and the small building blends into the trees. I always ran past it as a child. My adrenaline has worn off now, and my feet are aching from repeatedly smacking the concrete. I don't know what I was thinking coming this far into town. I wasn't thinking, I suppose. My already questionable sanity is at play again as a shadow emerges from underneath the awning of the post office. I begin to back away, slowly, just in case I'm not imagining things.
"Tessa? What the fuck are you doing?"
the shadow says in what sounds like Harden's voice. I turn on my heel to run, but he's quicker than me. His arms wrap around my waist and he pulls me to his chest before I can take off. A large hand forces me to look up at him, and I try to keep my eyes open and focused, despite the heavy drops of rain clouding my vision.
"Why the hell are you out here in the rain, alone?"
Harden scolds through the noise of the storm. I don't know how to feel. I want to take Harden's advice and just feel however I want to, but it's not that simple. I can't betray the tiny scrap of strength left inside me. If I allow myself to feel the overwhelming relief of Harden's hand on my cheek, I will be letting myself down.
"Answer me. Has something happened?"
"No." I shake my head, lying. I step back from him and try to regain my breathing. "Why are you here this late, out in the middle of nowhere? I thought you were at the Porter's." For a minute, I panic, thinking that Mrs. Porter somehow told him about my embarrassing and desperate lapse in judgment.
"No, I left there about an hour ago. I'm waiting for a cab. The asshole was supposed to be here 20 minutes ago."
Harden's clothes are saturated, his hair is drenched, and his hand is shaking against my skin.
"Tell me why you are out here, barely dressed and barefoot."
I can tell he's making a conscious effort to stay calm, but his mask isn't intact the way he believes it to be. Clear as day, I can see the panic behind the green of his eyes. Even in the dark, I can see the storm brewing behind them. He knows. He always seems to just know everything. "It's nothing. Not a big deal." I take a step away from him, but he isn't having it. He steps toward me, even closer than before. He's never been anything less than demanding. Headlights break through the veil of rain, and my heart begins to pound inside my chest when the shape of a truck comes into view. My brain catches up to my heart, and I realize I know that truck. When it stops, Zed jumps out and rushes toward me, leaving his truck running. Harden steps between us, silently warning him not to come any closer. Yet another scene that I become too accustomed to and would rather not see again. Every aspect of my life seems to be a cycle, a vicious one, one that takes a piece of me with it each time that history repeats itself. Harden's voice is loud and clear, even through the rain.
"What did you do?" "What did she tell you?"
Zed counters. Harden steps closer to him.
"Everything,"
Harden lies. I struggle to make out the expression on Zed's face. It's impossible to see clearly, even with the help of his headlights shining on us.
"She told you that she kissed me then?"
Zed sneers, his voice an awful mixture of malice and satisfaction. Before I can defend myself against Zed's lies, another set of headlights breaks through the night and joins the chaos.
"She what?"
Harden shouts. His body is still turned toward Zed, and the taxi's headlights shine across the space, giving me a glimpse of the smug grin spread wide across Zed's face. How could he lie to Harden like that about me? Will Harden believe him? More important, does it matter if he does or not? Does any of this actually matter?
"This is about Sam, isn't it?"
Harden asks before Zed can respond.
"No, it's not."
Zed wipes his hand across his face, pushing water away. Harden points a damning finger at him.
"Yes, it is. I knew it. I fucking knew you were going after Tessa because of that whore." "She wasn't a whore, and this isn't only about her. I care about Tessa, just the way I did Samantha, and you had to fuck it up. You always have to come in and fuck everything up for me,"
Zed screams. Hardin takes a step closer to him, but says to me,
"Get in the cab, Tessa."
I stand in place, ignoring him. Who is Samantha? The name sounds slightly familiar, but I can't place it.
"Tessa, get in the cab and wait for me, please,"
Hardin says through clenched teeth. His patience is running thin, and by the look on Zed's face, his is already evaporated. "Please don't fight him, Hardin. Not again," I beg. I am sick of the fighting. I don't think I can take watching another violent scene after finding my father's body lifeless and cold.
"Tessa,"
he begins, but I interrupt. The last bit of my sanity has officially disappeared as I beg Hardin to leave with me. "Please, this week has been so terrible and I can't watch it. Please, Hardin, just get in the cab with me. Take me away from here, please."
Chapter 38. Hardin. Tessa hasn't spoken a word since I got into the cab, and I'm too busy trying to reel my temper into comment. Seeing her out here, in the dark and running from something, running from Zed, drives my anger full force, and it would be all too easy to give in to it, to set it free. I can't do that, though. Not this time. This time I will prove to her that I can control my mouth, my fists too. I got into this cab with her instead of smashing Zed's skull against the concrete, like he deserved. I hope she recognizes that. I hope that helps my case, even if by the slightest bit. Tessa hasn't tried to escape yet. She didn't speak up when I told the driver to take us by her mum's to get her shit. That's a good sign. It's got to be. Her clothes are soaked, clinging to every inch of her body, and her hair is matted to her forehead. She pushes the mess back with her hand, sighing when the unruly strands won't stay put. It takes every ounce of my self-control not to reach over and tuck her hair behind her ears.
"Wait here while we go inside," I tell the driver. "We will be back in less than 5 minutes, so don't move this cab." He was late to pick me up in the first place, so he shouldn't mind waiting. Not that I'm complaining. If he hadn't been, I wouldn't have run into Tessa walking alone in the damn rain. Tessa opens the door and walks across the yard. She doesn't flinch as the rain pours down on her, shielding her body and nearly taking her from me. After reminding the driver to stay put a second time, I rush after her before the rain can separate us further. I hold my breath, forcing myself to ignore the red truck parked in front of the house. Somehow, Zed got back here first, like he knew where I would take her. But I can't lose my temper. I have to show Tessa that I can hold myself together and put her feelings before my own. She disappears into the house, and I follow only seconds behind. But already Carol is on her when I enter.
"Teresa, how many times are you going to do this? You're dragging yourself right back into something that you know isn't going to work."
Zed is standing in the center of the living room, dripping water onto the floor. Tessa's fingers are pinching the bridge of her nose, a sign of pure distress. And once again, I struggle to keep my damn mouth shut. It will only take one wrong word from me to make her stay here, to keep her hours away from me. Tessa holds up one hand, somewhere between commanding and pleading.
"Mother, can you please just stop? I'm not doing anything. I just want to leave here. Being here isn't helping anything, and I have a job and classes in Seattle."
"Seattle?
You're going back to Seattle tonight?"
Carol exclaims at her daughter.
"Not tonight, but tomorrow. I love you, Mother, and I know where you are coming from, but I really just want to be close to my... well..."
Tessa gazes at me, uncertainty clear in her gray eyes.
"Landon. I want to be with Landon right now."
"Oh." Zed opens his goddamn mouth.
"I'll drive you."
I just can't stop myself from cutting in at the suggestion.
"No,
you won't." I'm trying to be patient and shit, but this is too much. I should have barged in here, grabbed Tessa's bag, and carried her out to the cab before Zed could so much as look at her. The smirk on his face right now, that same fucking smirk he gave me only minutes ago, is taunting me. He's trying to push me, trying to make me snap in front of Tessa and her mum. He wants to play games with me, like he always does. But not tonight. I won't give him the satisfaction of being his pawn. "Tessa, grab your bag," I say. But the mirrored scowl on both women's faces makes me reconsider my choice of words. "Please, please grab your bag." Tessa's hard expression softens, and she pads down the hallway and turns into her old bedroom. Carol's eyes move back and forth between Zed and me before she speaks.
"What happened to make her run out into the rain? Which of you caused that?"
Her glare is murderous, almost comical, really.
"He did!"
The two of us answer and point simultaneously, like children. Carol rolls her eyes and turns to follow her daughter down the narrow hallway. I focus on Zed.
"You can go now."
I know Carol can hear me, but honestly, I don't give a fuck at this point.
"Tessa didn't want me to go. She was only confused. She came on to me. She begged me to stay here with her."
He spits. I shake my head, but he continues.
"She doesn't want you anymore. You've spent your last dollar where she's concerned, and you know it. You see how she looks at me? How she wants me?"
I ball my fists, taking deep breaths to calm myself. If Tessa doesn't hurry out with her bag, the living room will be painted red by the time she returns. That fucker and his fucking smirk. She wouldn't kiss him. She wouldn't do that. Visions from my nightmares swirl behind my lids, bringing me one step closer to my breaking point. His hands on her pregnant belly, her nails raking down his back. The way he's always mixed up with other people's girls.
She wouldn't do that. She wouldn't kiss him. "This isn't going to work," I say, forcing the words out. "You aren't going to antagonize me into attacking you in front of her. Not again." Fuck. I want to smash his fucking head open and watch his brain matter pour out. I want to so fucking bad.
He sits on the arm of the couch and smiles.
"You've made it so easy for me. She told me how much she wants me. She told me less than a half hour ago."
He glances down at his empty wrist as if he is checking the time on a watch. He's a dramatic motherfucker. Always has been.
"Tessa!"
I call to gauge how many more seconds I have to tolerate this asshole's presence. Silence fills the house, followed by the murmuring voices of Tessa and her mum. I close my eyes momentarily, hoping that Carol hasn't convinced Tessa to stay in this shithole of a town for another night.
"That drives you crazy, doesn't it?"
Zed mocks, continuing to goad me.
"How do you think I felt when you fucked Sam? It was 1,000 times worse than the petty jealousy you feel right now."
As if he could possibly fathom the depth of what I feel regarding Tessa. I give him a bored look.
"I told you to shut the fuck up and leave. No one gives two fucks about you and Sam. She was easy. Too fucking easy for my liking, really. And that was that."
Zed takes a step toward me, and I straighten my back, reminding him that my height is one of my many advantages against him. It's my turn to fuck with him.
"What? You don't like hearing about your precious Samantha?"
Zed's eyes turn dark, warning me to stop, but I refuse. He has the fucking nerve to kiss Tessa and try to use her feelings as ammunition against me. He obviously doesn't know that I have an entire arsenal up my fucking sleeve.
"Shut up!"
he snaps, pushing me further. I may keep my hands to myself this time, but my words will make more of an impact anyway.
"Why?"
I glance down the hallway to make sure Tessa is still occupied by her mum, while I torture Zed with my words.
You don't want to hear about the night I fucked her. I can barely remember it, really. But I understand it was so new a feeling for her that she was writing about it in that little diary of hers. She wasn't very memorable, I suppose, but at least she was eager. I knew how into her he was, and at the time I assumed their relationship would make her more of a challenge. The joke was on me when she ended up being more of a hassle than a toy. I fucked her brains out, though. I can assure you that. That must be why she pulled that pregnancy shit afterwards. You remember that, don't you? For a moment, a brief moment, I pause and consider how he must have felt when he found out. I try to remember what was going through my mind when I decided to pursue her. I knew they were dating. I'd heard her mention his name in the copy room at Vance, and I was instantly intrigued. I had only known Zed for a few weeks, and I thought it would be fun to fuck with him. You were supposed to be my friend. His pathetic words fall between us. Your friend? None of those degenerates were your friends. I barely knew you. It was nothing personal. I look down the hallway to make sure Tessa isn't around. Then I step closer and wrap my fist around the collar of his shirt. Just like it was nothing personal when Stephanie introduced Rebecca to you, even though she knew Noah was seeing her. Personal is what you're aiming for by fucking with Tessa. You know what she means to me, more than any office whore could ever mean to you. I'm caught off guard when he pushes back, slamming me against the wall. Picture frames rattle and fall to the ground, causing Tessa and her mum to rush into the hallway. Fuck you! I could have fucked Tessa too. She would have easily given herself to me tonight if you wouldn't have shown up. His fist connects with my mouth, and Tessa shrieks in horror. The harsh taste of copper fills my mouth, and I swallow the blood in a quick gulp before wiping my sleeve across my lips and chin. Zed! Tessa scolds, rushing to my side. Leave! Now! She shoves her small fists against his chest, and I grab hold of her, gently putting space between them. The pure experience of Tessa hearing him speak of her that way makes me fucking ecstatic. This is what I've been warning her of all along. He has never been the sweet, innocent man she was manipulated into thinking he was. Granted, I do know that he has some feelings for her. I'm not completely blind to that. But his intentions were never pure. He just proved that to her, and I couldn't be happier. I'm a selfish bastard, but I never claimed otherwise. Without another word, Zed walks out the front door and into the rain. Headlights flash through the front windows as he peels off and disappears down the street.
Harden?
Tessa's voice is soft and laced with exhaustion. We've been in the back seat of this cab for almost an hour without a single word between the two of us.
Yeah?
My voice breaks and I clear my throat.
Who's Samantha?
I have been waiting for her to ask this question since we pulled away from her mum's house. I could lie to her. I could make up a bullshit story to make Zed look like the piece of shit he is. Or I could be honest for once. She's a girl who had an internship at Vance. I fucked her while she was dating Zed. I decide not to lie, but regret the harsh words when Tessa flinches. Sorry, I just want to be honest, I add, in an attempt to soften the words.
You knew she was his girlfriend when you slept with her?
She stares straight into me in that way only she can. Yeah, I knew. That's why I did it. I shrug, ignoring the pinch of remorse threatening to surface.
Why?
Her eyes search mine for a decent answer, but I don't have one. I only have the truth, the filthy, fucked-up truth. I have no excuse. It was just a game for me. I sigh, wishing I weren't such a piece of shit. Not for Zed's sake, or Samantha's, but for this beautiful, sweet girl who even now doesn't have a hint of judgment in her eyes as she looks at me, waiting for further explanation. You forget that I wasn't the same before I met you. I was nothing like the man you know. Well, I know you think I'm fucked up now, but trust me, you would hate me even more if you knew me then. I look away from her and out the window. I know it doesn't seem like it, but you really have helped me so much. You've given me a purpose, Tess. I hear her sharp exhale of breath, and I cringe at the thought of how my words must sound. Pathetic and insincere, I'm sure.
And what's that purpose?
She asks, timidly in the sudden stillness of the night. I'm still trying to figure that out, but I will figure it out. So please try and stick around long enough for me to find the answer. She looks at me but stays quiet. I'm thankful for that. I don't think I could handle her rejection right now. I turn my head and look out into the black, black darkness of the landscape around us, and I'm glad that nothing final and devastating came from her mouth.
Chapter 39. Tessa. I wake up to arms wrapping around my waist as I'm lifted out of the car. The white light on top of the cab reminds me of the night I've had. I take in my surroundings, panicking for a moment before realizing that we are in Ken's driveway, not...
I would never take you back there,
Harden says into my ear, knowing exactly what I would worry about before the thought can even gel in my mind. I don't protest as Harden carries me up the driveway and into the house. Karen is awake, sitting in a chair by the window, a recipe book in her lap. Harden places me on my feet, and I feel a little wobbly. Karen stands, walking across the room to hug me. What can I get you, dear? I made some caramel cakes. You'll love them. She smiles and wraps a warm hand around mine, leading me toward the kitchen without a peep from Harden.
I'll take your bag upstairs,
I hear him say. Is Landon asleep? I ask his mother. I think so, but I'm sure he won't mind if you wake him. It's still early. Karen smiles and places a small caramel-topped cake on a plate before I can stop her. No, it's okay. I can see him tomorrow. Landon's mother's eyes are on me, soft with her familiar tenderness. Her fingers are nervously twisting her wedding ring on her thin finger. I know this is terrible timing, and I'm so sorry, but I wanted to talk to you about something. Her warm brown eyes flash with concern, and she waves for me to take a bite of the dessert as she pours two glasses of milk. I nod for her to continue, my mouth full of the delicious cake. I couldn't eat earlier. I was too overwhelmed, and the day has been too long. I reach for another slice. I know you have so much going on already, so if you want me to leave you be, just tell me. I promise I understand, but I would really like your opinion on something. I give her another nod, enjoying the dessert. It's about Harden and Ken. My eyes go wide, and immediately I start choking on the cake and reach for the milk. Does she know? Has Harden said something? Karen pats my back while I drink the cold milk down, rubbing in circles as she continues. Ken's so happy that Harden has finally started to tolerate him. It makes him so happy that he is finally building a relationship with his son. It's something he's always wanted. Harden is his biggest regret, and it hurt me for years seeing him that way. I know he's made his mistakes, many, many mistakes, and I am in no way making excuses for those mistakes. Her eyes fill with tears, and she dabs at the corners with her fingers. Sorry, she says with a smile. I'm a mess. After a couple of deep breaths, she adds, He isn't the same man now that he was then. He's had years of sobriety and therapy, years of reflection and remorse. She knows. Karen knows about Trish and Christian. My chest tightens, and my eyes fill too. I know what you're going to say. I feel for this family. I love them as my own, and I feel for everyone in this family that's full of secrets, addictions, and regrets. You do? She blows out a ragged breath that speaks a little of her relief. Landon told you about the baby? I should have known he would. So I'm assuming Harden knows too, then? I start coughing again. After an awkward fit, during which Karen keeps watching my expression, I finally speak. What? A baby? So you didn't know. She laughs softly. I know I'm much older than you would expect a pregnant woman to be, but I'm only in my early 40s, and my doctor has assured me that I'm healthy enough. A baby? I'm relieved that she doesn't know about Christian being Harden's father, but this is beyond a surprise. Yes, she smiles. I was just as shocked as you are. Ken, too. He's been so worried about me. Landon nearly had a breakdown. He knew about all of my appointments, but I didn't tell him what they were for, so the poor thing thought I was sick. I felt terrible, and I had to come clean. This wasn't planned. Her eyes search mine. But we are happy now that we've gotten over the initial shock of having another child so late in life. My arms wrap around her, and for the first time in days, I feel joy. Where there was nothing dominating my core, there is joy. I love Karen and am thrilled for her. This feels so good. I was beginning to worry that I would never feel this way again. This is amazing. I'm so happy for you two, I gush, and her arms tighten around my back. Thank you, Tessa. I knew you would be, and it is quite exciting the more and more I live with the reality of it. She pulls back and kisses my cheek, then looks me in the eye. I'm just worried about how this will make Harden feel. And like that, my joy for her is cut short and instantly replaced by worry for Harden. His entire life has been a lie, and he hasn't exactly handled the news well. The man he believed to be his father is now having another child, and Harden will be forgotten. Whether that's true or not, I know him well enough to know that's where his mind will go. And Karen knows it, which is why she was so worried about bringing it up. "Do you mind if I'm the one who tells him?" I ask. If not, I understand. I don't allow myself to think too far into this. I know that I'm blurring the lines here, but if I'm leaving Harden, I need to make sure I'm not leaving a mess behind. That's an excuse, part of me warns. No, of course not. To be honest, I was hoping you'd want to. I know this puts you in a terrible position, and I don't want you to feel obligated to get in the middle of this, but I am afraid of how Harden will react if Ken is the one to tell him. You have a way with him that no one else does. It's fine, really. I will talk to him tomorrow. She hugs me again. Today has been a tough day for you. I'm sorry for bringing this up. I should have waited. I just want to avoid the news being a surprise to him, especially since I feel like I'm starting to show a little bit. He's had a hard enough life already, and I want to do whatever I can to make things easier on him. I want him to know that he's a part of this family, and that we all love him so much, that this baby won't change that. He knows, I promise. He may not be willing to accept it yet, but he knows. Footsteps reach the bottom of the stairs, and Karen and I pull away from each other reflexively. We both wipe our cheeks, and I take another bite of the cake as Harden enters the kitchen. He's showered and changed his clothes. He's now wearing a pair of sweatpants, the legs of which are too short. The WCU logo stitched along his thigh is a dead giveaway that he's wearing Landon's clothing. No way is he a booster like that. If we were in a different place, I would tease him about the pants, but we aren't. We are in the worst place, yet in the best place for me. It's all confusing and skewed. Then again, a healthy balance and order has never been a factor in our relationship. Why would our breakup be any different?
I'm going to bed. Do you need anything?
He asks, his voice rough and low. I look up at him, but he's staring at his bare feet. No, thank you, though.
I put your stuff in the guest room, your room.
I nod. The insane, untrustworthy part of me wishes Karen weren't in the kitchen with us. But the rational, bitter, and much larger part of me is glad that she is. He disappears up the staircase, and I say goodnight to Karen before going up myself. In short order, I find myself outside the room where I've spent some of the best nights of my life. I raise my hand to the knob, but quickly pull away as if the cold metal might burn my skin. This cycle has got to stop. And if I give in to every impulse, every fiber of my being that desperately craves to be close to him, I'll never make it out of this continuous loop of mistake after mistake, fight after fight. I finally let out a breath as I close the guest room door behind me and turn the lock. I fall asleep, wishing that the younger me had known just how dangerous love could be. If I had known it would hurt this bad, If I had known the way it would rip me apart, then sew me back together, only to tear me into pieces again, I would have stayed as far away from Hardin Scott as I possibly could. Chapter 40. Tessa.
Tessie, I'm here. Come in here.
My father calls down the hall, excitement clear in his loud voice. I climb out of my small bed and rush out to him. The loose ties on my robe nearly trip me in my haste, and I fumble to bind them again as I burst into the living room, where my mother and father are standing next to a beautifully decorated and lit-up tree. I've always loved Christmas.
Look, Tessie, we got you a gift. I know you're an adult now, but I saw this and had to get it for you.
My father smiles and my mother leans into him. An adult? I look down at my feet, trying to decipher his words. I'm not an adult. At least I don't think I am. A small box is placed into my hand, and without so much as a thought, I eagerly rip the shiny bow off the gift. I love gifts. I don't get them often, so when I do, it's special for me. As I tear it, I look up at my parents, but my mother's excitement throws me off. I've never seen her smile this way, and my father, well, I feel as if he shouldn't be here, but I can't remember why that is.
Hurry and open it,
my father urges as I lift the lid off the box. I nod excitedly and reach inside, only to pull my hand back when something sharp pricks my finger. I nearly curse from the pain and drop the box to the floor. A needle falls onto the carpet. When I look back up at my parents, my father's skin has lost all color, and his eyes have gone void. My mother's smile is bright again, brighter than I've ever seen it before, as bright as a blinding sun, it suddenly seems. My father bends down and grabs the needle from the floor. He takes a step toward me, needle in hand, and I try to back away, but my feet won't move. They won't move, no matter how hard I try, and I'm left helpless, only to scream as he pushes the weapon into my arm.
Tessa!
Landon's voice is frantic, loud, and frightening as he shakes my shoulders. I'm sitting up somehow, and my shirt is stained with sweat. I look at him, then back down to my arm, searching like a lunatic for puncture marks.
Are you okay?
He exclaims. I gasp for breath, my chest aching as I struggle to find air and my voice. I shake my head, and Landon tightens his grip on my shoulders.
I heard you scream, so I...
Landon is rendered silent when Hardin barges into the room. Hardin's cheeks are flushed a deep red, and his eyes are wild.
What happened?
He brushes Landon off me and sits next to me on the bed.
I heard you scream. What happened?
His hands move to my cheeks, and his thumbs brush over the tear stains there. I don't know. I had a dream, I manage to say.
What sort of dream?
Hardin's voice is nearly a whisper, and his thumbs are still gliding, slowly as ever, across the skin just under my eyes. The kind that you have, I reply, my voice equally hushed. A sigh leaves his lips, and he frowns.
Since when? Since when do you have my sort of dreams?
I take a moment to collect my thoughts. Only since I found him, and it's only been twice. I don't know where they're coming from. His distressed hand runs over his hair, and my heart twists at the sight of the familiar gesture.
Well, I'm sure finding the body of your dead father would cause anyone to...
He stops mid-sentence.
I'm sorry. Fuck. I need a filter.
He sighs in frustration. He shifts his eyes from mine and looks over to the bedside table.
Do you need anything? Water?
He tries to smile, but it's forced. Sad, even.
I feel like I've offered you water 1,000 times in the last few days.
I just need to go back to sleep.
I'll stay?
He half demands, half asks. I don't think... I look over at Landon. I almost forgot he was in the room with us.
It's cool.
Hardin's eyes stare past me at the wall behind my head.
I get it.
When he shrugs his shoulders in defeat, it takes everything inside me, every ounce of my self-respect, not to wrap my arms around his neck and beg him to sleep with me. I need his comfort. I need his arms around my waist and my head on his chest as I fall asleep. I need him to give me the peace in sleep that I have always provided for him, but he's no longer the safety net I relied on. Then again, has he ever been? He's been on and off, always just out of reach, constantly running from me and our love. I can't chase him again. I simply don't have the strength to chase after something so unattainable, so unrealistic. By the time I manage to break free from my thoughts, only Landon remains in the room with me.
"Scoot over,"
he quietly instructs. I do just that and fall back asleep, regretting my earlier thoughts of wishing I had stayed away from Harden. Even in the midst of the inevitable tragedy that was our relationship, I would never take a second of it back. I wouldn't do it again, but I don't regret a moment I spent with him.
Chapter 41. Harden. The weather here is much better than in Seattle. The rain is nowhere to be found, and the sun has come out for a rare appearance. It's April now. It's about damn time that the sun is out. Tessa has been in the kitchen with Karen and that Sophia chick all day. I'm trying to show her that I can give her space, that I can wait until she's ready to talk to me. But it's harder than I could have imagined. Last night was hard for me. Really damn hard, to see her so distraught, so afraid. I hate that my nightmares have rubbed off on her. My horrors are contagious, and I would take them from her if I could. When Tessa was mine, she always slept peacefully. She was my anchor, my comfort in the night, fighting off my demons for me when I was too weak, too distracted by self-pity, to help her battle them. She was there, shield in hand, fighting every image that threatened my fucked-up mind. She bore the burden on her own, and that's what finally broke her. Then I remind myself that she's still mine. She's just not ready to admit it again. She has to be. There is no other way. I park my car in front of my father's house. The leasing agent gave me shit when I called to tell him that I'm moving out. He fed me some bullshit about charging me 2 months' rent for breaking the lease, but I hung up mid-conversation. I don't care what I have to pay. I'm not living there anymore. I know it's an impulsive decision, and I don't exactly have another place to live, but I'm hoping I can stay at Ken's for a few days with Tessa until I can convince her to move in with me, in Seattle. I'm ready for this. I'm ready to live in Seattle if that's what she wants. And my offer of marriage isn't going anywhere. Not this time. I'll marry that girl and live in Seattle until I die if that's what she wants. If that's what makes her happy. How long is that chick staying? I ask Landon, pointing out the window at the Prius parked next to his car. It was kind of cool of him to offer to take me to get my car, especially after I chewed him out for sleeping in the room with Tessa. I wouldn't have been able to unlock the door, he pointed out, but I would have broken the damn thing down if I had the energy. The idea of the two of them sharing a bed has been driving me fucking crazy since I heard their hushed voices from outside the door. I ignored the puzzled look on his face when he found me half asleep, sitting on the floor outside the door. I tried to fall asleep in the empty bed in my designated room, but I just couldn't. I had to be closer to her, just in case something happened and she screamed again. At least, that's what I kept telling myself, as I struggled to stay awake in the hallway the entire night.
I don't know. Sophia is leaving to go back to New York later this week.
His voice comes out high-pitched and awkward as hell. What the hell's that all about?
What?
I press him as we walk inside the house.
Oh, nothing.
But Landon's cheeks flush, and I follow him into the living room, where Tessa is standing near the window, staring off into space while Karen and Mini-Karen share a laugh. Why isn't Tessa laughing? Why isn't she at least engaged in the conversation? The woman smiles at Landon.
There you are.
She's pretty enough. Nowhere near Tessa's beauty, but she's easy on the eyes for sure. As she approaches, I look over and notice that, again, Landon is blushing. A pastry is in his hand. She's smiling wide, and it clicks.
Why didn't I see it before?
He fucking likes her.
A million jokes and embarrassing comments flood my mind, and I literally have to bite my tongue to prevent myself from torturing him with this information. I ignore the start of their conversation and walk straight to Tessa. She doesn't seem to notice my presence until I'm directly in front of her. "What's going on?" I ask. There's a fine line between space and, well, my normal behavior, and I'm trying my best to find a good balance, even if it's hard to break the habit. I know that if I give her too much space, she will withdraw from me. But if I suffocate her, she will run. This is new for me, completely uncharted territory. I hate to admit this to myself, but I had gotten a little too used to her being my emotional punching bag. I hate myself for the way I've treated her, and I know she deserves better than me, but I need this last chance to become someone better for her. No, I need to be myself. Just a version of me who is worthy of her love.
Nothing. Just baking. The usual. Well, taking a little break from baking, actually.
A faint smile crosses her lips, and I grin at her. These small affections, these minuscule hints of adoration toward me, fuel my hope. A hope that's both new and very much out of my comfort zone. But I'll gladly spend my time figuring it out. Karen and Landon's number one spank bank chick come over and signal to Tessa, and within seconds they're all back in the kitchen, while Landon and I are forgotten and left alone in the living room. As soon as I'm sure the women can't hear me, a devilish grin stretches across my face, and I accuse Landon.
You're hot for her.
How many times do I have to tell you? Tessa and I are just friends.
He sighs an annoyed and overdramatic sigh while scowling at me.
I thought you understood that after cussing me out for an hour this morning.
I waggle my eyebrows.
Oh, I'm not talking about Tessa. I mean Sarah.
Her name is Sophia.
I shrug and keep smiling.
Same thing.
No.
He rolls his eyes.
It's not. You act like you can't remember any woman's name except Tess.
Tessa,
I correct him with a frown. And I don't need to remember any other women's names.
It's disrespectful. You've called Sophia every name that begins with an S except her actual name. And it drove me insane when you called Dakota Danielle.
You're annoying.
I sit down on the couch, smiling at my step. Actually, he's not actually my stepbrother anymore. Never was. Realizing that fact, I'm not really sure how I feel about that. He fights a smile.
So are you.
Would he care if he knew? Probably not. He would probably be relieved that we aren't related, even by marriage.
I know you like her. Admit it,
I taunt.
No, I don't. I don't even know her.
He looks away.
Busted.
But she'll be in New York with you, and you can explore the streets there together and get caught up under an awning during a dramatic downpour. How romantic.
I pull my lip between my teeth to stifle a laugh at his horrified expression.
Would you stop? She's much older than me and way out of my league.
She's too hot for you, but you never know. Some girls don't care about looks,
I tease.
And who knows? She may be looking for a younger man.
How old is your old lady there?
24. Leave it alone,
he begs, and I decide to do just that. I could go on and on with this, but I have other things to focus on anyway.
I'm going to move to Seattle.
I feel sort of almost giddy as I blurt out the news. Sort of.
What?
He leans in, a little too surprised.
Yeah. I'm going to see what Ken can do about helping me finish the semester through distance learning. And I'm going to get an apartment in Seattle for Tessa and me. I already dropped my grad packet, so it shouldn't be too big of a deal.
What?
Landon's eyes dart away from me. Did he not just hear what I said? I'm not repeating myself. I know you heard me.
Why now? You and Tessa aren't together, and she...
We will be. She just needs a little time to think it through. But she'll forgive me. She always does. You'll see.
As the words leave my mouth,
I look up to see Tessa standing in the doorway, a deep frown etched onto her beautiful face. A beautiful face that instantly disappears as she turns on her heel and walks back into the kitchen without a word.
Fuck!
I close my eyes and lay my head against the couch cushion, cursing at myself for my awful timing.
Chapter 42. Tessa. New York is the best city in the world, Tessa. It's incredible. I've lived there for 5 years now, and I still haven't seen all of it. I bet that even in a lifetime you never could, Sophia says, while scrubbing at the baking pan that I burned a batch of dough in. I hadn't been paying attention. I was too lost in my own mind after hearing Hardin's arrogant, uncaring words to notice the smoke coming from the oven. Only when Sophia and Karen came rushing into the kitchen from the pantry was my attention brought to the burnt dough. Neither of them chastised me, though, and Sophia just sprayed it under cold water to cool it down and then started scrubbing. Seattle is the largest city I've been to, but I'm ready for New York. I need to get away from here, I tell them. Hardin's face just won't disappear from my mind as I say the words. Karen gives me a smile as she pours each of us a glass of milk. Well, I live close to NYU, so I can show you around if you want me to. It's always good to know someone, especially in such a big city. Thank you, I tell her, meaning it. Landon will be there, but he will be just as lost as I will surely be, so we could both use a friend out there. The thought of living in New York City is so intimidating, it's almost overwhelming, but I'm sure everyone feels like that before moving across the country. If Hardin were coming along... I shake my head to rid it of the useless thoughts. I couldn't even convince Hardin to move to Seattle for me. He would laugh in my face at New York. And he takes my plans, what I want, so for granted, that he thinks I'll forgive him just because I have in the past. Well, Karen smiles, lifting her glass of milk to mine. Here's to New York and new adventures. She beams. Sophia raises her glass, and I can't help but play Hardin's words in my head as we toast. She'll forgive me. She always does, you'll see, he told Landon. The fear of moving across the country lessens with each word of his as they play on a loop through my thoughts. Each syllable, a smack in the face to the tiny scrap of dignity I have left. Chapter 43. Tessa. To say that I've been avoiding Hardin would be an understatement. As the days have passed, only two of them, though it feels like 40, I have avoided him at all costs. I know he's here in this house, but I can't bring myself to see him. He's knocked on my door a few times, but was met with a weak excuse from me on why I'm not answering. I just wasn't ready. However, I've put off what I need to tell him too long now, and Karen is bound to get restless, I know it. She is bursting at the seams with happiness, and I know she doesn't want to keep the addition to their family a secret for long. She shouldn't have to. She should be happy and proud and excited. I can't ruin that for her by being a coward. So when I hear those heavy boots outside my door, I wait silently, pathetically, both hoping for a knock and wishing for him to go away. I'm still waiting for the day when my mind clears, when my thoughts go back to making sense. The more time that passes, the more I begin to question how clear my thoughts have ever been. Have I always been this confused, this unsure of myself and my decisions? I wait on my bed, eyes closed and lip throbbing between my teeth, for him to leave before knocking. I'm disappointed, yet relieved, when I hear his door slam across the hall. Gathering all my strength and my phone in my hand, I check my reflection in the mirror one last time and then cross the hall. Just as I lift my hand to knock, the door opens, and there stands Hardin, shirtless and looking down at me.
"What's wrong?"
he immediately asks. Nothing, I ignore the twist in my stomach as his brows pull together in worry. His hands touch me, thumbs gently pressing into my cheeks, and I just stand in the doorway, blinking up at him, not a coherent thought within reach. "I need to talk to you about something," I finally say. The words come out muffled, but he's looking down at me with confusion clouding his brilliant green eyes.
"I don't like the sound of that," he remarks somberly, and drops his hands from my face.
Going to sit on the edge of the bed, he beckons for me to join him. I don't trust the lack of distance between us, and even the thick air in the stuffy room seems to be taunting me.
"So, what is it?"
Harden spreads his hands out behind his head and leans back into them. His athletic shorts are tight. The waistband of them hangs so low that I can tell he's not wearing boxers underneath. "Harden, I'm sorry that I've been so distant from you. You know I just need some time to figure everything out," I say by way of a preamble. That wasn't what I had planned to talk to him about, but my mouth apparently has different plans than my head.
"It's okay. I'm glad you came to me because we both know that I'm shit at giving you space, and it's been driving me fucking crazy."
He seems relieved now that the words are between us. His eyes rest on mine, and I can't look away from the intensity behind them. "I know. I can't deny the control he has seemed to gain over his own actions during the past week. I like that he's become a little less unpredictable, but the shield that I've built is still present, still lurking in the background, waiting for him to turn on me, the way he always does. "Have you talked to Christian?" I ask, needing to move back to the topic at hand before I'm too far lost in the endless mess of us. Immediately he tenses, scoffing,
"No."
He squints at me. This isn't going well. "I'm sorry, I don't mean to be insensitive. I just want to see where your head is right now." He doesn't respond for a few moments, and the silence stretches between us like a never-ending road.
Chapter 44. Harden. Tessa's eyes are on me. The worry in them builds a gnawing worry in me in return. She's been through so much, a lot of which was at my hand. So worrying about me is the last thing she should be doing. I want her to focus on herself, on being herself again, and not putting any more effort into fretting over me. I love the way her compassion for others, especially me, overrides her own troubles. "You aren't being insensitive. I'm lucky you're even speaking to me. It's the truth. But whatever's supposed to come next in this conversation, I'm unsure of." Tessa nods slowly and pauses before gently asking the question that I'm sure was her main reason for coming in here.
"So, do you plan on telling Ken about everything from London?"
I lie back on the bed with my eyes closed and think about her question before answering. I have been thinking over this a lot the last few days, going back and forth between telling him in a rushed confession or doing the opposite and keeping the information to myself. Does Ken need to know? And if I tell him, am I willing to accept the changes that will come from this? Will there be any changes? Or am I just being a bitch about it? It seems fitting that the moment I start to tolerate and possibly forgive the man, I find out he's not my father to forgive after all. I open my eyes and sit up. I'm still deciding. Actually, I sort of wanted to get your opinion on that. My girl's blue-gray eyes aren't shining the way I've become so used to, but they hold more life today than the last time I saw her. It was pure fucking torture being under the same roof with her without being near her, not in the way I need to be. Everything has seemed to shift in an ironic twist of fate, and I'm now the one begging for attention, begging for simply anything that she will offer me. Even now, the thoughtful expression in her eyes is enough to soothe the constant ache that I refuse to learn to live with, no matter how far she pushes herself away from me.
"Would you like to have a relationship with Christian?"
she asks softly, her small fingers tracing the frayed stitching on the comforter. "No," I quickly respond. "Hell, I don't know." I backtrack. "I need you to tell me what I should do." She nods, and her eyes meet mine.
"Well,
I think you should only tell Ken if you think it will help you deal with some of the pain from your childhood. I don't think you should tell him if your only reason to do so is out of spite or anger. And as far as Christian goes, I think you have a little bit of time to make that decision. Just see where things go, you know?
She suggests in that understanding tone she has. How is it that you do that? She tilts her chin, confused.
Do what?
Always say the right thing.
I don't.
A soft laugh falls between us.
I don't say the right things.
You do. I reach my hand out for her, but she pulls away. You do say the right things. You always have. I just couldn't hear you before. Tessa looks away from me, but that's okay. It will take some time for her to get used to hearing these things from me, but she will get used to it. I've made a vow to tell her how I feel, and to stop being selfish and expecting her to decipher my every word and intention. The vibration of her cell phone breaks the stillness, and she pulls it from the pocket of her oversized sweatshirt. I force myself to pretend that she bought the WCU sweatshirt, and that she's not wearing Landon's clothing. I have been subjected to wearing every embroidered piece of WCU merchandise known to man, but I hate the idea of his clothes touching her skin. It's irrational and fucking stupid, but I can't stop the thoughts from entering and taking root in my mind.